The title of my presentation is E-Defined Data System in Chinese Corporate Governance. Subtitle is Formal Convergence, Substantial Divergence. And first, I would like to review the debate on convergence and divergence a little bit. Professor Ofugi already explained, I will not go deep into it, but I want to stress on one thing, that is, one professor has met Krugman, they argue for formal convergence. They admit that the convergence in law reform will proceed slowly than the convergence in corporate governance practice. And then they argue that there are already many indications of formal convergence, such as the adoption of Anglo-American institutions in other countries, like in the realms of board structure and so on. And then why Professor Leonard Gilson and like John Coffey argue for functional convergence? Their explanation for why such little formal convergence happens is that because changing the form of the existing rules is costly, so formal convergence might be the first response to the competitive pressure. But I want to highlight one topic. The scholars in convergence camp, they share one opinion is that the adoption of Anglo-American institutions happening in other countries evidence convergence, especially formal convergence. As well known, independent direct system is one of the most important Anglo-American institutions in corporate governance. Here I need to clarify that the independent direct system here includes the norm of independent directors and also the committee system mentioned by Professor Kim and Mr. Dolly. And then, so many countries try to adopt this system into their own country. In 2001, China also adopted this system. And then, in 2005, the revised company law incorporated the compulsory requirements on this system in China. So, the experience in China provides a very good test of ground on the convergence debate. And then, we can express the ground. Such adoption reinforced the argument used by Professor Hansen Krugman. But a deeper analysis will show a different picture. At first, I would like to draw people's attention to the differences in the detailed rules. At first glance, China adopted this system, the same norm of independent directors. But if we examine the rules in detail, we find many differences. First, the expected role is different. In US, independent direct system is expected to solve agency cost problems. However, in China, just as Professor Peng explained, China expected this system to solve the abuse by controlling shareholders at the expense of small shareholders. Due to this special expected role, the delimitations on independence are different. In US, they just focus on the independence from management. But in China, we not only focus on the independence from management, we also need to focus on the independence from large shareholders. And then, the proportional requirement is different. In US, the board is required to have majority of independent directors. But in China, we just require at least one third. And then the company structure requirement also different. In US, all of the listed companies are required to have audit committee. And then for the listed company, New York Security Exchange, we also need to have compulsory nominated committee and compensation committee. However, like in Japan and Korea, they focus on such committee system. However, in China, we just focus on the term of independent directors. Such committee structure is free for listed company to choose establish or not. And then, the nomination requirement is also different. In US, the nomination of directors should be controlled by entire independent directors. However, in China, board of directors, supervisory board, and shareholders who independently or jointly hold more than 1% shares can nominate independent directors. And here, I also need to explain a little bit. The supervisory board, we also call board of supervisors in China, is similar with the auditors, the statutory auditors in Japan and Korea. And then, because because we already have saturated sort of library in China, then the unique situation in China that now that this is the company, all the company must have independent directors and also at the same time have board of supervisors. Then how to reconcile the relationship between board of supervisors and independent directors? It's a tough question for Chinese board. However, in the US, they just have one tier board structure. There is no such concern. So till now, we can see that in the detailed rule, actually, even though the term of independent directors we already adopted in China, and then the code structure seems similar with the US, however, it provides a different picture. The detailed rule quite different. But sure, the scholars in convergence test may argue that such differences in the rule are minor and not important, because it is not surprising to have some big small differences in the adopted rule. And then secondly, they may argue that it is maybe the misunderstanding of American model by Chinese regulators, and then convergence will not happen overnight, and then it takes time for China to modify such rules. And then in order to answer this doubt, we need to examine the actual effect of this history in China at first. And then the empirical study shows that now currently in China, majority of the listed companies just have around one-third independent directors in the board. Only less than 1% of listed companies have majority of independent directors. It is clear that those proportions will have low power held by independent directors. And also, the statistics show that majority of the independent directors are nominated by large shareholders. And then it is obvious, as explained before, independent directors in China, we expect them to supervise large shareholders. However, these people nominated by large shareholders are very questionable whether they can fulfill this role effectively. And also, one more unique point in China is that most of the independent directors come from academics. Academic people will focus on theoretical analysis, and then they may not familiar with the actual operation of the business. It will doubtful whether they can fulfill their role as monitor well. And also, the empirical study shows that the independent directors in China are passive in the board. Many percentage of independent directors, they seldom risk objection against the large shareholder. And also, there are many percent of independent directors, they identify their role as counselor instead of as monitor. And also, an interesting denominator that there is frequent resignation and dismissal of independent directors happening in China. It may reflect some inherent problem in it. And also, legal links with the firm performance, and even some companies have negative links with corporate performance, and also the corporate scandals increase instead of decrease after adopting independent directors. All of this show that independent directors didn't function well in China. About the such kind of data and the statistics show a grim situation about independent directors in China. And then later I will introduce two four typical cases to provide a much clearer picture what happened to independent directors in China. The first case is Lu Jiahao case. This case is the independent directors were the first time punished by Chinese government. The interesting point in this case is that the independent directors used such kind of arguments to defend themselves. Lu Jiahao argued that I always regard independent directors as an honorary title. I didn't take part in the decision making, so I should not be liable. And also, he argued that he is a teacher teaching foreign language, know nothing about the operation of the company, and he should not be, also should not be liable. And then in this case, they do show some problems for academics to work as independent directors. And then the second case is Le Shen Electronic Power case. It is the first case for independent directors in China to use the right of inviting outside audit firms to investigate listed companies. However, the result of this case is that the outside audit firm had to leave the firm without expressing any opinion because they couldn't get necessary cooperation from the listed company. And then, feel disappointed, this independent director resigned from the position. And then, in Xinjiang Chonghe case, Wei Jie, a well-known economist at Tsinghua University, and then he served as independent director in this firm. He knew very well about operations of business, and then he raised a lot of objections in the for the meeting. However, even though he vetoed the issues discussed in the board, the issue still can get approval as scheduled. He feels so frustrated and also wants to resign from the listed company. The second and the third case show that there's a huge tension between listed company and independent directors. Listed company, they will limit the information to independent directors and also will create obstacles to independent directors, prevent them from interference. And then the fourth case is a little bit unique. In this case, independent directors suspect the transaction discussed in the board and then request detailed information from the listed company. And then the result is listed company ignore their request. However, in the following interim shareholding general meeting, they passed the proposal written by board of supervisors to dismiss this independent director. The ironical result is that in China, the quiet, obedient independent directors stay in the listed company, the noisy and the maybe a little bit stubborn independent directors, they are resigned, quit or dismissed by the listed company. So all of these facts show that independent directors didn't function well in China and had little influence on Chinese corporate governance. As shown in the graph, the left side is the differences in the rules. The right side is about the factors, about the actual effect of the system. Due to time limitation, I will not explain in detail. But all of this show that all the factors actually is a kind of interactive. Even though the differences in the rules seem minor, but it shows that it highly impedes the actual effect of this system in practice. And then, now people may ask whether China has such kind of difference in the rules, and is it possible for China to eliminate all of these maybe minor differences in the rules? At first, I need to clarify this, that it is the officials who get education in the U.S. they advocate and lead this law reform in China. The possibility for them not to know the committee system's importance and not know the proportion requirements, I think is quite rare. And then, why do such kind of differences exist in the rules? Actually, we found that the local forces force such kind of differences to be inevitable. Here, I just try to focus on the local forces represented by concentrated shareholder structure, lack of candidates, and also the two-tier board structure. As Professor Cohen explained, in China, we have a kind of unique shareholding structure. And then, the shareholder structure is highly concentrated. The state shares prevail individual shares. The non-tradable shares prevail tradable shares. And then, we found that such unique shareholding structure caused serious problems, that is, the exploitation of small shareholders by controlling shareholders. And because of such kind of problems, we called the special executive role for independent directors. And also, because of such special executive role, the independence requirements also different. And then, because independent directors are devised to supervise large shareholders who control the listed company, it caused the above mentioned the tension between listed company and independent directors. And also, it is obvious it will cause tremendous resistance to require a majority of independent directors and a committee structure from the large shareholders. And then also, the lack of candidates reinforces the difficulty to have a requirement such as majority of independent directors and also committee structure. And then the two-tier box structure also reinforces the difficulty to have requirements on committee structure, because the audit committee, as mentioned by two of the team and also the body, the audit committee in US, all of the power and the authority rests with audit committee, actually already held by the statutory board of supervisors in China. So it's difficult to put all emphasis on independent directors, because well, we have the existence of board of supervisors. So it shows that such kind of differences is not simple. Actually, it's caused by the local board. And then now we may ask whether such kind of differences will be eliminated in the future. We find that actually, in current situation, there is no sign for China to change the concentrated shareholding structure. Even though China now is undergoing share trading reform, but the government stated their stance clearly that the share trading reform that is now underway is to realize trading of non-tradable shares rather than to sell state shares through the capital market. And the state does not consider selling the state shares to raise funds through the domestic capital market. So it's clear, if the state will not sell their shares, the concentrated shareholding structure still will not be changed. And then, let's check the two-tier box structure. It's interesting. In China, we have board of supervisors, and also we adopted independent directors from the US. So we provide a very good example whether China will give up the board of supervisors, change from two-tier board to one-tier board. Let's examine the prediction by Hansman, Krasner, and Frist. They predict that with respect to board structure, convergence has been in the direction of a legal regime that strongly favors a single-tier board with a substantial complement of outside directors. Two-tier board structure seems a thing of the past. And then, let's examine what's happening in China. The newly revised company law happened in 2005. Significant changes in this newly revised company law. However, instead of weakening supervisory board in opposite direction, this new revised company law vests a lot of broad and new authority of and power to with board of supervisors. And there is also no sign for China to give up the supervisory board, change to be one higher board structure. So without the change of the concentrated shareholder structure, without the change of the board structure, it's difficult for China. Maybe China will change the difference in the rules slightly, but it's difficult for China to eliminate all of these differences to be identical with the American rules. And then it shows that in the detailed rules, there are many minor differences. And then such minor differences seem minor and maybe not important, but will have huge impact on the actual effect of the system in practice. And then such differences in the rules are not simple, not misunderstanding of American model by Chinese regulators. Actually, they are determined by the constraints from local forces. And also, it is difficult for China to change such kind of concentrated shareholder structure and also board structure. So the adoption of independent direct system in China shows that on one side, it evidences some limited level of convergence in form. However, on the other side, there exist many minor differences in the detailed rules, the shareholder structure, and box structure that still remain different from US model, which at the same time show many indications of divergence. So here I want to argue that we cannot overstate the adoption of American model happening in other countries. The adoption of Anglo-American institutions cannot be simply used as an evidence to show convergence. So So finally, it changed to the question is, to which level corporate law and corporate governance will converge worldwide? As Professor Ofsky mentioned, scholars discuss the different level of convergence. However, Chinese experience just indicates that limited formal convergence may occur, but substantial secondary convergence is unlikely. That's all. Thank you.